Hey Cones, real quick before we start, if you're looking for some help with your next cruise, don't hesitate to reach out to me directly and I'll provide you with a start to finish guide on what you can do to get the most out of your next vacation. We'll get on the phone, I'll give you some options, and we'll pick the right ship going to the right places at the right price. Just email Tommy at alwaysbebooked.com and we'll get started today. It's a great way to help the show and it's a great way to make sure you have your best cruise yet. And they're billing this as sort of like a VIP spot for special occasions.
You know what VIP spot means, right? Bring your checkbook, because I don't know how much they'll charge for this. It sounds pricey.
I love that Ryan is the youthful voice on this podcast, and he just came with bring your checkbook.
Bring your checkbook. Hey, I said checkbook because I'm getting ready to pay my rent next month.
Ryan, so what do you think it means when they say California cuisine? What would you say that is?
Small portions, trendy, young.
Definitely avocados.
No checkbooks. You don't need
no checkbooks.
All aboard and welcome back, Cones. It's time to check in to the Always Be Booked Cruise Podcast with your hosts, Tommy and Ryan.
That's right. You heard the nice lady. We are back. The Always Be Booked Cruise Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Tommy Casabona. We have another host. His name is Ryan Q. Ryan, what's going on, brother?
Another week. I'm doing well. It's getting cold up in New York. I wish it was down in Florida, but it's that time of year.
Yeah, that's what I hear. It's getting a little chilly up there, but I don't have that same problem down here. Loving the 75 to 80 degree weather down here in sunny South Florida. But I'll tell you who's not loving things right now. Are you familiar with this, Life at Sea World Cruise that was supposed to happen, this three-year cruise? Have you looked into that at all?
Yeah, I did. I saw a lot of the headlines too coming out of the cancellation. So I assume that's where you want to go with this. But quite the concept. A lot of people are up in arms or homeless. So yeah, it's quite the situation.
It's bizarre because this was like, you have the world residence at sea, and that's basically a scenario where you're taking residence on a cruise ship. And then you have what we know as world cruises, anywhere from 45 days to 120 days. I think this was a little bit of a go-between in that regard. It was called, like I said, it was called Life at Sea, and this was going to be a three-year world cruise. So again, I don't know what people were thinking beyond the 3 years, but I do know that a lot of people were selling their goods, selling their homes, moving out, and kind of looking at it like it was going to be an either permanent or semi-permanent thing. So this was supposed to leave on November 30th. It was going to travel to exactly 382 ports across 140 countries. There's been rumblings of these types of products that have been introduced to the public, and it doesn't seem like many of them really go off. There were signs of trouble in paradise a while ago when the company just basically went radio silent. I would say that's a pretty bad sign, right? If you're investing $75,000 to $100,000 into your residence and your quote unquote vacation for the next 3 years, and you can't get anybody on the phone. What do you do at that point?
Yeah, that would have been the first warning flag for sure. I mean, I wouldn't have booked a sailing without a ship either in the first place. It sounds great. I mean, someone like me would be a great prospect for something like this. If you can work from home and I'm renting, I can just kind of get up and go. And I think, maybe there were a lot of people in that situation, or retired folk, folks that were ready to kind of go into this phase of life and just see the world. And that's great, but I don't know that I would have been sold on this specific example here, because they didn't have a ship. While it sounds great, and it still sounds great if someone can get it right, I wouldn't have signed up for this one specifically.
Right. You mentioned they didn't have a ship. They were supposed to purchase the Aida Aura, and out of nowhere, that was sold to Celestial Cruises on November 16th. Now, a lot of people out there said, or I think the company was kind of standing on, well, this is part of the reason why we can't do this, and this was the wrench. No, I'm not buying into that. They did say that they had investor issues. Some investors were pulling out. I get a feeling that they probably just couldn't buy this ship anymore. They didn't have the funding to buy this ship, which meant that, you know, I guess AIDA had to go with their plan B, and that was to sell it to Celestial Cruises.
Yeah, and that's a good plan B. I mean, you don't just on November 16th sell the ship to someone else for the, you know, 2 weeks before the November 30th with Life at Sea. You know, I think this was their backup plan, and any good company, savvy business leader would have some sort of backup plan. I think it's crazy, though, that they don't have a ship 2 weeks before the sailing. I would have been calling. I'm sure a lot of people were trying to call and get their money back at that point.
And that's the thing, too. What would happen if they had made the purchase? Okay, say on the 16th, that sale didn't go through. On the 14th, you know, Life at Sea got made the purchase happen. You're telling me that they were going to do the necessary refurbishments, add the POS systems, staff it, train it. That was all going to happen in a matter of weeks?
Right. Where are the crew? I don't know. I didn't hear of anyone getting hired or trained, or that would have been a disaster. I mean, I'm always talking about how you'll never see me on an inaugural sailing. And I can't say never, but I've heard really bad things about those sailings because there's so many hiccups, you know, for you being the first. And you're not only the first on board, you're the crew is first time they're on board as well. So there's so much to navigate with some sort of first. And this was cutting it close. I mean, I don't see how that could have ever been off to a great start.
Exactly. So they were supposed to leave on November 1st originally. Now that got postponed to November 11th, and then ultimately it was supposed to happen on November 30th, and then it got completely canceled. Now apparently on November 19th, there was still some sort of hope. The company said they were still looking for solutions, but then the conversation started going into refunds and, you know, payment plans that they were going to get back to, you know, the money was going to come back. And this is another weird thing that happened. The CEO of the entire company resigned. Her name was Vedat Ergurlu. And interestingly, she was tapped to release a statement that basically would break the news saying that the sailing was not to be, but she did this after she was no longer an employee of the company.
It's a wild concept. It makes me wonder if she was, you know, she resigned. It seems like she resigned on her own terms, but I don't know. Was she paid to give some sort of memo and be the face of the failure? I hate to say it, but, you know, they put her behind this sort of memo saying, oh, it's not happening, instead of it being about the company and everyone collectively. And for her to release that after resigning, I don't know. I never heard of really this kind of situation. Have you?
No. It's, I mean, you can count on one finger how many of these projects, these very, very ambitious projects even exist. And like you said, you know, you would think even with inaugurals or, you know, something like this, it's difficult. You would think at first glance, these are professional cruise companies, these cruises. I could tell you just by being in the hospitality industry, you know, that's why you do soft openings. That's why we do 3 days of basically open to the public at charging either free food and service or at a drastically reduced price, because no matter what, with all the moving parts in a restaurant, there are going to be kinks that have to be worked out. So I could imagine what that must be like extrapolated out to that of a cruise ship, or just, you know, especially one that people are going to be living on for a while.
Yeah, it's interesting in our industry, though, that, you know, they're charging a crazy amount of money to be the first, right? The inaugurals are always selling out rapidly. They're at a ridiculous amount, in my opinion, ridiculous cost. So it's interesting how it's almost the opposite. I wouldn't want to pay all that money and then get a less than expected experience. I'd rather come around 2-3 months later.
Oh, I get it. I get where you're coming from. But I guess, you know, the only rebuttal to that is that there is an element of being a part of history, I guess, that you're trading in. If you could say you're on the, I mean, this Icon of the Seas inaugural is going to be big. And a lot of people who are going to be able to say, I guess, bragging rights, saying that they were on the inaugural sailing of Icon of the Seas, which we will talk about a little bit later. The screwed up part is that many people have already made their travel plans and gone to Istanbul to get ready to board this ship. They've sold goods. They've changed living arrangements. And I wouldn't advise this, but many people, they put all their eggs into this basket. They took all the money that they had, or at least a significant portion of it, put it into this sailing thinking, okay, well, you know what? This is where I'm going to be. I'm good. My money's here. I don't have any money now, but it's okay because I'm going to be on this cruise ship. Now, you got a scenario where the cruise line is telling you that we're going to pay you back, but it's going to be on a payment plan. And these people have to figure out what they're going to do and what type of living situation they're going to have for the next, I guess, foreseeable future.
Well, depending on when their lease was up or whatnot, I can see them saying, oh, I don't want to commit to something for another month or two. Let me just go to where the ship leaves. And so I'm sure they picked up and went there. And I mean, this was marketing at its finest. It reminds me of, and you may know about the example, but that fire festival, right? Where everybody got sold on it. They show up and they're eating, you know, spam or cheese sandwiches out of a disaster tent or something, you know. So this is really marketing at its finest. I mean, they convinced all these people to give basically, I don't want to say all of them gave their life savings. I mean, I'm sure there were people out there that could even survive a loss, but you know, they've convinced all these people to give them a ton of money and basically devote 3 years of their life to this. And without, I mean, there was just so much risk, and it's easy to say that, I guess, for me after the fact, but I can see in the moment where, you know, you get excited about it. The marketing's great and it does sound really great. I agree. I would love to do something like this, but as I mentioned before, I wouldn't be on the first. And I think this is another example of why we should be cautious, you know, sometimes as consumers with something that's a first or something new, a new company. Let them gain a reputation before you really put all your eggs in that basket.
That's the hard part, like judging, you know, who the bad actor is. Because the truth is that, you know, anything that goes off without a hitch, Carnival Cruise Line. I mean, you think about back in the day, Carnival Cruise Line, there's legendary stories about how, you know, the first couple of sailings, they couldn't pay their bills for fuel and they were taking money out of the slot machines in the casino to pay their gas bills. So, so the thing is like, you know, and then what happened to Carnival Cruise Line? So the people who have the initiative and quote unquote, let's call it what it is, balls to make these types of take these risks and try to go all in on a dream, you know, knowing full well that this can go bad. You know, is this guy, is this company, whoever the powers that be, you know, Firefest, yes. Firefest to me, that was fraud. That was criminal. That guy did go to jail for what he did. And that was just, you know, false advertising, fraud, whatever you want to call it. And shout out to Ja Rule. Ja Rule escaped without a problem on that one. He probably should have taken a little bit of hit on that too. But yeah, like you said, the awful tents, which is not what they were, the waterlogged mattresses, the just bait and switch across the board. But, you know, again, I'd be lying while this is a shit show. I would be lying if I said I didn't have some sort of sympathy for people like this who, you know what? I got a dream. I'm going to put it together. It's going to take some luck. It's going to take some hard work and it's going to take a team effort. But if everything aligns right, we're going to do something great here. But it doesn't always work out. And it doesn't always mean that this guy had bad intentions or he was trying to rip people off. The bottom line is he just failed at what he was trying to do, right?
Yeah, I'm sure more information will come out over the next few weeks, and I'm interested to see how this repayment works and what I'm sure we'll have firsthand accounts of some of the passengers that were meant to be on board. So, yeah, I have sympathy for them, just as I have sympathy for that family that was denied the $60,000 refund for their Alaskan cruise. I mean, This kind of stuff happens, unfortunately, and it's not specific to the cruising industry. It's big company versus customer, you know. So
here's my question to you. Ultimately, odds that everybody who put in money will get a full refund. Do you see that happening?
I don't know. I could see. I don't know what banks they're with. I can see the banks bailing them out, I guess. I mean, that's the thing with cruising too. I don't know that it's associated with any sort of government. Like you saw during COVID, you know, the government kind of stepped in and helped the airlines, helped this, helped that, but they didn't really help the cruising industry. And a lot of the ships aren't registered in the U.S. either. So for these kind of bailouts and like protecting the consumer, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know that there's not as much oversight, I don't think, in cruising. And I'm not an expert, so I don't know.
We will see. All right, that's it. Life at Sea Cruises. We wish nothing but the best for everybody who invested money, and we hope that you come to a resolution as soon as possible. And I hope we're able to pick up the pieces. But let's get into the main topic for the show. All right, Ryan, with the completion of this. Now, have you heard of this, Ryan? Have you heard of a little project Royal Caribbean has going on? It's called Icon of the Seas.
Yeah, a little project. They always have little projects going on over at Royal Caribbean. It's right. It's quite the ship, and it's complete.
They finished it, you know, unlike Life at Sea, Royal Caribbean having a little bit more resources, they were able to finish the project.
They didn't even have to buy it. They built it. How about that?
Exactly. And what a build it was. You know, let's go back to 2009 when, and in my opinion, is still the most important cruise ship that was ever built was Oasis of the Seas. Changed the game forever. It really basically shined a light on what cruising can actually be. Whether you like it or not, that size of cruising, you have to be impressed and, you know, somewhat awestruck by the structural wonderment of these ships. Now, Icon of the Seas. Now, I do not believe that the launching of Icon of the Seas or the introduction of Icon of the Seas is really on that same level of when Oasis came out. But this is, you know, but when you compare it to the way the industry has existed before. But I will say that this will be the biggest and baddest and most impressive thing at sea so far. I mean, how good is Royal Caribbean? How good is their marketing machine?
Yeah, everybody knows about it. I mean, in public, I see it on TVs. I mean, I get all of the emails, and I'm plugged in, right? I'm definitely their target audience, but you see it everywhere. I mean, you see it at events. You see it on billboards. I mean, they really are. I mean, they're a money machine, and they have a good product. They know their market, and I think this is a step in the right direction, actually, the Icon. And I know we'll get into some of the details on that ship, but there's a lot of new and firsts, and Royal Caribbean always seems to do that, and really they make it known to the public, and I think their marketing team is stellar.
Right. So we got a lot to go through on this, and I'm going to hopefully try to be a little bit, I guess we're going to try to work within our time frame here, but we may go over some of the vital stats. This thing is going to be north of 250,000 gross tons. It's going to be 1,198 feet long. It is going to be able to carry 5,610 guests at double occupancy and 7,600 at full occupancy. That basically, just to review the breakdown on that, is if you're going to base it on two people per room, it's 5,610. If you're going to, I guess, factor in how many people you can actually put on this ship, you can put 7,600 people. And let's give a little bit of a frame of reference. Right now, the largest ship in the world is Wonder of the Seas. And so compared to the 250 gross tons, Wonder is 236. Now, here's the interesting part. At double occupancy, Wonder of the Seas is going to hold more people than Icon of the Seas because it's at 5,734 to Icon's 5,610. The total amount of people that it can hold is more than Wonder, because Wonder's at 7,084, where Icon is at 7,600. So that's significantly more. Obviously, a new record for the largest cruise ship in the world. And if Royal Caribbean isn't breaking records, they're just not going to do it. It does enter service in early 2024. And you know, they're going to do it big for the inauguration, I would imagine. Right, Ryan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They'll ease into it. They'll have plenty of ceremonies. I mean, you'll have travel agent events. You'll have a lot of PR, a lot of ship tours, I'm sure. So yeah, they'll do it big. Everyone will know about it.
Celebrities will be involved. I mean, you'll see it everywhere in every commercial. Fellas like me and you are going to have to get used to, you know, civilians DMing us advertisement campaign footage of this stuff all the time. Like, we haven't seen it 100 times. You know, It's going to have 7 pools, 6 water slides. It's going to have the largest water park at sea, as we always have to break records. And it's going to have a suspended infinity pool. This ship, they've been talking about how much of a focus that they are going to have on families. And, you know, you looked at the renderings and I don't know, Royal Caribbean, in my perception of Royal Caribbean has always been like a little bit of the toned down version of the big three, a little bit more of the royal, the classy. But over the past couple of years, they've gotten very, very colorful, haven't they?
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with that now. For sure, I think NCL is being more of the blander kind of mutual color ships, I in my opinion, as they build more. So, yeah, a lot of color on this ship.
I agree. One of the things that you hear people throw out when the initial renderings came out is it was dubbed People's Lasagna. I've seen that kind of playfully being thrown around. And, you know, it's just basically because you have those exposed decks that are layered on top of each other with the crazy colors. And if you look at, you know, the back of the ship, it kind of expands out or further off the back of the ship as it gets higher.
Yeah, no, it's a massive ship. It really is. And there's so much on it, right? It's prompted all these people to kind of be creative and say, oh, first roller coaster at sea, you know, first amusement park at sea. And people are making fun of it because it just kind of, it looks like you just take a city and you put it on and you're right. It overhangs, it hangs over, you know, the ship itself. So it kind of looks funny. I still think it looks weird, but
it does. It does. And a lot of times, you know, you look at the renderings and they don't always look exactly like, oh, okay, I saw the rendering, but that doesn't exactly translate to what it looks like in real life. The balance is between the wow and the practical, the gimmick versus the functional. And we'll see, because I think they've hit on a bunch of stuff that they've innovated that you would never have thought that they could do at sea, and they've done it, and it's been a practical win, for lack of better terms. And then there's been other things like that have proved to be gimmicky, and you know what, it's nice to have it, but you know what, is that really more of just a advertising gimmick than it is functional? I'm not really sure, but they are sticking with the neighborhood concept. A couple of new neighborhoods are coming into play, but what they have, so here are the neighborhoods: the Aquadome, Thrill Island, Chill Island. You know, I guess they're basically, you know, in the spirit of moving land-based destinations onto a cruise ship, that's, they just got that marketing and that branding from Perfect Day at CocoCay. They have a Surfside neighborhood, the Hideaway, Central Park, Royal Promenade, and the Suites neighborhood. So we'll start with the Aquadome. And this is, I mean, this is a risk. This is bold. This is people with, I mean, serious imagination coming into play and just basically taking the cruise ship right where in the area where the Solarium would have been and just slapping a giant dive theater on the top of the ship. Pretty ambitious, no?
Yeah, I think the Aquadome concept is in the move in the right direction, right? Because I always enjoyed the back of the ship water shows, but you were always subject to the weather that night. So I think the Aquadome is covered, and they're still bringing back that sort of that entertainment concept. And I think it's a great entertainment concept. It differentiates them from other, you know, from their competitors. And now you can do it no matter the weather. And it is a pretty incredible space. And I saw some renderings during the day too, as kind of a hangout area with a bar, a lot of comfortable seats. So it's yeah, I think it's a great concept.
Yeah. And it looks like they're trying to be able to, I guess, maybe fit the Aqua Theater along with the 270 Lounge concept from a lot of their Quantum Class ships in one venue. So that's what that is. But the Aquadome, yeah, looks beautiful. It's going to be something that you're going to see from miles away. Very, very impressive. All right, we'll move to Thrill Island, which is basically what they're calling the theme park. They're saying it's the biggest theme park at sea. They have a Category 6 for 6 water slides. One of the water slides will be the tallest at sea at 46 feet. Usual suspects like the Matt Racers, Raft Sliders, and other thrilling options. And then they have a feature called Crown's Edge. And this is basically like a ropes course meets their zip line on steroids. And you'll be able to kind of do all sorts of death-defying rope walks 154 feet above the ocean over the side of the ship. Are you you game for those, Ryan, or no?
No, I won't be on. I won't be on that. But I did see I read about it, and yeah, you're suspended off the ship, and you walk down this platform, and the platform actually gives out at one point. I'd be curious to know if it's like a timed thing, or if it's if the staff can kind of play around with you, because at one point you're just standing there on this platform, and then it gives out, it drops down, and then you kind of that starts your zip line. I'm better off in the pool with a pina colada.
Totally. Then they have Chill Island. What have you heard about Chill Island?
Yeah, Chill Island. It looks like a great concept. That I can see myself really hanging out in Chill Island. So it's more of a laid back atmosphere. Pools. You know, you mentioned there's a ton of pools on the ship, and a swim up bar. And I didn't know this actually. This week I read about the swim up bar. It's funny because last week, I believe you asked me about, you know, features that I'd enjoy or look forward to on my own ship if I could build one. And I mentioned swim up bar. I didn't know that the Icon would have one, and I would definitely be there. So that's a first for them.
Right. So Swim and Tonic is a great name. And I love a freaking swim up bar, as you could find me there at Coco K. But I listen, man, I hate to be the guy to say it, but I got to hope that they're going to have the right filtration and sanitization things in place, because Ryan, people don't like to get out of swim up bars.
Yeah, I mean, I do, but yeah, I don't know. They're doing it in the pools, right? Hot tubs, maybe not. I don't know.
Very respectful.
I'm not much of a swimmer, actually, on board, but I'll be in the swim-up bar.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in the swim-up. I'm in the swim-up bar. I'm not swimming, but I'm there. And then you have Royal Bay, and that's going to be billed as one of the larger pools at sea, and that is their suspended aft pool. If I don't know, maybe in the production there'll be some applause right there, because at long last Royal Caribbean has clearly finally started listening to this show, and they decided to get those dumb surf machines out from the back of the ship and put an infinity pool with an unobstructed view of the horizon.
That looks exciting. You should be excited about it, right? It's that would be where you would hang out, right? You love an aft infinity pool or aft pool in general, and the way it's suspended and unobstructed, I can see myself hanging out there and watching the sunset. I mean, that looks like a great view. If it comes out like the rendering, that's a really cool concept, as long as I don't hear the kids below. So under that, where like the boardwalk concept would be on the Oasis class of ships is Surfside. And it replaces the boardwalk. There's a lot of color there too. But there's a lot of, there's slides. There's the carousel is back. There's some dining concepts, a smaller sort of water park, like a splash area. So I can see a lot of the younger kids hanging out there, and it's really taken over. You know, if you can picture the boardwalk area, it's really that whole area devoted to the family, the family traveler. And there's still rooms that overlook that area. So I don't know, maybe maybe those cabins are designed for families, but I will not be booking one of those cabins. I'll tell you that much.
Right. So I was like, I heard this and I was reading about it and learning about it. And as a fan of the boardwalk, I was giving this a whole big WTF, Royal Caribbean. But after thinking about it a little bit more, I thought maybe this is a good thing. And again, please, people out there, again, something I always say, I do respect and love the family. I love kids. I love the family. I would, come on. It's just, I happen to be a single guy. I happen to cruise differently. So it's not like I want less families on cruise ships, which is great here, because I'm thinking, you know what? All right, I lose the boardwalk. But if this is where the families are all going to hang out, and this is where the kids are going to run around, and it's kind of like just designated for them, that means maybe the rest of this ship is for us, right?
Yep. Like I said, you'll see me in the swim up bar.
Yeah, beautiful. All right. They also have the Hideaway. The Hideaway is where I guess, like I just, I guess aforementioned, I love how the these things kind of roll into each other. The Hideaway has the suspended infinity pool, the hot tubs, and this might be what you might consider to be the, I guess, replacement for the very conspicuously missing solarium. They're getting away from the solarium here, I guess, in the form of, because of the fact that they, you know, they're introducing the Hideaway concept, right?
Yeah, I don't, is it? Yeah, I think it is. I think this is like the adults only area. Yeah. And I think there's a lime and coconut bar. I don't know. There's so many neighborhoods, I'm confusing them, but they I know there's a lime and coconut bar kind of dedicated in the adults only area. And I think, yeah, I think it's Hideaway.
Yep. And then they have a Mediterranean themed suite neighborhood. They have a sun deck, that stone private sun deck. They're calling it the Grove, and it gives a little bit of a Mediterranean feel. And they have the two-story coastal kitchen, which is very popular amongst Royal Caribbean.
And I think they have another food venue like out on the open deck too for the suite.
Oh, really?
I think the suite area is three decks in total. I mean, it's going to give the Haven a run for their money, in my opinion. I'm looking at the renderings on the suite area. It's a massive, massive area of the ship, and three decks, and it's kind of this complex. So, I don't know. I think it's appealing if you've got the bankroll to partake. I would recommend it.
Totally, totally. Congratulations and kudos to Royal Caribbean for scratching that itch for all those ship within a ship fans. All right, Royal Promenade. We know what this is. Now, this is going to be a different take on it, though, because it's given it a little bit of a refined look. Now, instead of just being a straight across shopping mall style type of, I guess, layout, it's going to wind a little bit. So it's going to have a little bit of a curvature to it. That's a contrast to what they used to do. It opens up to an area where there is a three-story window. The idea here is that when you've been on Royal Caribbean ships in the past, people love Royal Promenade. I am definitely a fan of the Royal Promenade, but the knock is that it really disconnects you from the sea. And this is going to be something that's going to hopefully try to remedy that situation by, I guess, giving a three-story or floor-to-ceiling window that is going to probably, in my mind, the renderings I've seen, it's going to give a little bit of that Excel class on Carnival and Viva on Norwegian look to, I guess, what would otherwise be an enclosed Royal Promenade. Have you seen any of those?
Yeah, I saw it. It looks great, like the floor-to-ceiling windows. And I'd have to see it firsthand. I do like the traditional promenade. And when I've been on the Anthem many times, and they have the Esplanade. And I was never a big fan of it because of the curvature. It winded me around kind of like it just felt like the casino kept going, and I couldn't escape it. There were no windows or anything. I don't know. This does sound good in the sense that it connects you with the sea. It forces you to kind of look outwards instead of looking inwards. But I have to see it firsthand because I do like this. I do like the promenade as like this night area. Like you'll always see me hanging out in the promenade at night. So I'm sure I would do it here, but I'd have to see what it looks like in person.
And you could even go outside. They have a cocktail lounge at a place called 1400 Lobby Bar. To round out the Royal Promenade, you're going to have the two levels. There'll be Playmakers, dueling pianos, which is a nice, cool addition. I love the Schooner Bar, but it's a little bit sleepy. It's a little bit dated for me. So they're going to do a dueling pianos bar scenario, which is great. The Attic Giovanni's. So Giovanni's, they will still have the Schooner Bar. Pearl Cafe, Boleros, which is their Latin concept, is always electric in that room. The English Pub, which is a favorite of mine. The aforementioned 1400 Lobby Bar, and a place called Spotlight Karaoke. And did I mention the Sorrento's Pizza?
Uh-oh, karaoke.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to avoid that one.
Yeah. You won't find Ryan at the karaoke bar in the Royal Promenade. Now, one thing that's got a lot of attention is this, I guess it's a showpiece called The Pearl. It's an ultra impressive piece of art that spans three decks. It's they basically say it's as heavy as a 747, which is always interesting what people decide to compare things to. All right, 747, we'll go with that. It's also a staircase that connects decks 5 and 6, I believe, or connects two decks. It's got LED lights and a 3,000 tile structure that's designed to combine and provide a multi-sensory experience for you guys. And it's a lot of curiosity And it's, in my opinion, I think it's going to be one of the more photographed places, or a place where people like to get into a group and take photographs. I think you're going to see a lot of this this pearl in the Royal Promenade.
Yeah, every night there'll be the photographer will be set up there, I'm sure. I saw it when I first saw it. I'm like, what is this? I'm like, they took Spaceship Earth from Epcot and put it on board. I mean, it reminds me of that kind of globe effect. And it'll be photographed for sure. And I can't say if I wasn't on board, I wouldn't take a picture of it either. But is there any function to it? I don't know. The sensory experience has me thinking. So I am excited to see what it's about.
Right. All right, let's fly through the dining and the entertainment. So dining, they're going to have Empire Supper Club, which is going to be sort of a steak seafood concept while listening to live jazz, which is really, really cool. Celebration Table, this is kind of unique, and it's going to be near the Aquadome. It's going to cater to larger parties. You're going to get your own personal lounge for you and your crew. Every seat will be a window view. They're going to have prefix items there, so you can choose between Italian, Asian, American, some seafood, and you basically do a prefix menu there. And they're billing this as sort of like a VIP spot for special occasions.
You know what VIP spot means, right? Bring your checkbook, because I don't know how much they'll charge for this. It sounds pricey. It sounds like, well, Chef's Table we know about, but I don't know. The Celebration Table, it's I don't know. I haven't seen any renderings of it, but it sounds expensive. So
I love that Ryan is the youthful voice on this podcast, and he just came with bring your checkbook.
Bring your checkbook. Hey, I said checkbook because I'm getting ready to pay my rent next month. So
yeah, there's still some things that are, people use checks for. The Aquadome Market. So this is basically like probably what your Promenade Cafe would be, because they're probably doing what they do on the Quantum Class ships by putting the deli near 270 Lounge or whatever it was, sort of like a deli cafe type of a scenario. You have your Surfside Eatery, which is the buffet, casual spots like the California-inspired Pier 7. What does that even mean? Well, Ryan, what do you think it means when they say California cuisine? What would you say that is?
Small portions, trendy, young.
Definitely avocados.
No checkbooks, though. You don't need a checkbook.
No checkbooks. Sushi and sake to go in Central Park, which is interesting. Chops, Giovanni's, Hooked, Izumi, all the usual suspects from Royal Caribbean will be there. There's a venue called Absolute Zero. This is kind of cool. It's a new take on Studio B. They kind of, I guess, updated it with more technology, driven with LED walls and way more lighting and special effects features for, all the ice skating shows. Are you into the ice skating at Sea, Ryan? Do you watch that stuff?
Yeah, ice skating karaoke. I told you about it. This will be, I think I read this will be the largest ice skating venue at sea, which, again, no surprise, but yeah, I do like the ice skating shows. It mixes it up a bit. You go to see the water show or the diving show, you go see the ice skating. It is nice to mix it up and not just go to the theater every night.
So a lot to be done. This is not going to be the last time we talk about Icon of the Seas. We will get into it again. I think, that was a pretty good deep dive in the spirit of it being complete. I wanted to basically celebrate, talk about, maybe get ourselves a little bit more familiar than we otherwise were with the biggest and baddest cruise ship that has ever been built. And we'll round it out with the production shows. They're going to have The Wizard of Oz. They're going to have a show called Aqua Action. They're going to have Starburst. That's more along the lines of my ideas, having the strip club at sea. Starburst, Elemental Beauty. And it's going to be, this is kind of strange. I would actually think it's cool. The nerd in me would think it's cool. It looks like it's some sort of interactive planetarium style show that gives you, that incorporates the, what is it called? The periodic table of elements? In science? Is that what it's called?
I did have to memorize that in college. I do remember that.
All right. So then they have a show called Pirates and Mermaids. They have a story time show on ice called Once Upon a Time. And then they also have a fully immersive, interactive, big band experience show called Show Band. And that sounds kind of cool. They're going to have like a 16-piece orchestra, and it's not just going to be them playing music. It's going to be like they're going to have lights and special effects and different things incorporated into that show. But any other, I guess, curiosities or anything else to say on Icon of the Seas, Ryan?
No, that's it. Something to celebrate, of course, and a lot of firsts, and no surprise by Royal Caribbean for them to come out and just change the way we think about cruising. So, yeah, I think it's good we deep dived, and I'm interested to see the content that comes out of this and feedback from the first guests, and we can continue to kind of check the pulse on the new ship.
All right. Recently, we've introduced or incorporated into the show a couple of segments here. The first one is One More Visit, Stay Forever, or Never Again. We pick three things and we attach it sort of like our F, marry, kill type of a scenario. We pick three things that are cruising related or related to each other. And we basically decide which one we'd want to do once more if we can only do it once more, which one we do forever if we could do it forever, and which one we never want to do again. And then this iteration, this is cruise line steakhouses. Chops, which is Royal Caribbean, Cagney's, which is Norwegian, and Fahrenheit 555, which is Carnival. F, marry, kill, One More Visit, Stay Forever, Never Again. Ryan, you go first.
One More Visit, Fahrenheit 555. So I love that concept. I like going there the first day and you get your bottle of wine complimentary. So I do like it. I think it's something you can always count on, and it's got, you know, it's always there. I've never had like a varying experience. It's always kind of this, I get what I expect, and I like it as a concept. Stay Forever, Cagney's. I don't want to always sound like I have this NCL bias, but I really do, of the three, enjoy Cagney's the most. So Stay Forever, Cagney's, and Never Again, Chops. I've been to Chops usually every cruise. Every Royal cruise, I go to Chops and try to go to Giovanni's, and depending on the ship, I'll sprinkle in something else. But Chops has been disappointing me. I don't know why. I mean, maybe the last, and it's not even one, I'm not the type of person that, you know, has one bad experience and I never go back. I think I've given it like three or four chances recently, and I don't know, it's been disappointing between my steak not being cooked properly, the time it takes in the restaurant, and it's on multiple ships, so I'll try it again, but never again in this hypothetical situation would be Chops.
Fair enough. I've always said, and you guys have heard me talk a lot about Carnival being my favorite steak at sea, and that is still the case, even though I feel like, you know, it's not as the same. On the Splendor and on the Miracle, when it was, I believe it was Nick and Nora's, on the Miracle, and I forgot what it was called, on the Splendor. On the newer ships, I feel like it's taken a step back. I still feel like it's the best steak at sea, and that is Fahrenheit 555 is my Stay Forever. My One More Visit is definitely Chops, because I did have an adequate steak there. And again, it could have just been because I had a couple of bad experiences. My Cagney's visits have not been that great. I definitely don't feel as though you're dealing with a prime steak. I don't really feel like, again, and it's all about, you know, what kind of day it was. Maybe it wasn't cooked. I definitely ordered it medium rare. It was at least medium. So for that reason, I would throw away Cagney's. I like that. We were a little different on that one, weren't we?
We always seem to be different, which is good. It's good to have different perspectives. We don't want to be both saying the same thing. So,
but sometimes we overlap, like with our top five. And in the top five this week, we're going to talk about our favorite ever shore excursions. And for purposes of time, we'll move along here quickly because I know we're behind, and I'll give you my five best, and I'll say that this is in order from five to number one. Number five, Virgin Gorda Baths. I mean, just a bucket list type of a thing. I absolutely love my trip there. There was so much to see. Something that you see in photographs, but then finally get a chance to see in real life is always exciting. That is exactly what Virgin Gorda Baths were for me. Number four would be the Coba Ruins slash Cenote trip. That was in Cozumel, Mexico. I chose the Coba Ruins based on the fact that you could climb them. And then they packaged that excursion in with a cenote, which is when you go down, you know, into a cave, you know, we guess several stories underground, and then it opens up because of the limestone and the porous nature of the geography there. You're able to basically swim in a cave that's under the water, which I don't know how many stories it was, 4 or 5 stories down, but very, very interesting and unique experience. Another bucket list was my Aruba ATV adventure, which was awesome. Just speeding around the deserts of Aruba on an all-terrain vehicle. Number two was the Shelf, the snorkeling excursion in Grand Turk, where first we swam around in a beautiful kaleidoscope of beautiful different fish. And we actually had an experience where we swam with a Nerf or nurse shark, whatever they call it. And then we went over to the Shelf, which is an area where you're swimming in 12 feet of water, but then it drops off into like thousands and thousands of feet right there. And that was a very, very unique experience being in the water doing that. And my number one was the Bob Marley experience. Just it was a little bit of a death ride through the rain for 2.5 hours to get to this place. But once we got there to the real home and the Rastafarian compound of Bob Marley, and to see the actual places where he lived, where he wrote his music, where he's actually, you know, his tomb, walked, did a lap around his tomb. There was drug use that I didn't partake in, but it was just a really, really cool and I want to say almost spiritual experience at the Bob Marley house on Mount Zion in Jamaica. And that wraps up my top 5 excursions. Ryan, what about yours?
When you say Bob Marley experience, all I'm thinking about is the roller coaster reference in Atlantic City.
And you Minna order them wing, me order the roller coaster.
Yeah, you do it much better than I do. Cracks me
up. I haven't heard you do it yet. One day we got to do it. Have a couple of whiskeys and I got to hear you do it.
There we go. So number 5 for me is Peggy's Cove out of up in Halifax, Nova Scotia. So it's quite a drive from where the ship docks, but once we got out there, it was, I mean, you can't even describe it. You have to do it firsthand, and it's this lighthouse on the rocks you just can't even describe it. It's just a beautiful, beautiful area of the world, and I'm happy I went there. I've been there twice, actually. Number 4, I did a catamaran excursion in St. Lucia and went to the Pitons, and we floated around and had some local beer, and it was just a great day on a catamaran. Really one of those simple excursions, but just pure cruise bliss and a couple of beers in the sun, and we had a party going back, and they had the music going. We were all up dancing. It just like these memories that stick out over the years. Number 3, Juno whale watching. So that was like just a perfect day. For whatever reason, the stars aligned. We saw a ton of bears on the side of the road as we drove to the boat before we left. And we got on the boat, and we went out, and we saw breaching whales. For whatever reason, it was late in the season. The captain was like, I would have bet my house that we'd never see a breaching whale. And something must have upset the whales that day because they were breaching. And you know what it means to breach, right? It comes right out of the water, got some great pictures. And that was just such an awesome experience. Number 2, I'd say, is the Belize City Cave tubing. So, you know, docking in Belize City proper, not one of the islands, but then you take kind of this hour shuttle ride out to the caves, and I don't know, do a small hike, and then you go through these caves, and that was just such a cool experience for me. Hard hat with your light on, and you're going through this cave on a kind of like a lazy river speed. Number 1, Virgin Gorda. So there's an overlap. I had an awesome time. I actually did that excursion when we met on that cruise on the Gem. So that was just an awesome experience for me. And I don't know. It's just so cool. A lot of great pictures that day too. That's it.
Awesome. Awesome. It's crazy because, yes, you know, these excursions and the times that we have at these excursions, it's half of it is the excursion itself. But then I would say there's a portion of that experience that just may have been a unique to just that time, whether it was who you with or who the guide was or what was happening at that particular point that would, I guess, enable you to kind of spring into the pure cruise bliss. It's not always me and you could do the same excursion, right? And I could have a crappy experience because, you know, or I could have an okay, a fine experience, but then maybe you had the best time of your life because you know what? You met that group of five that was on it that made it that much more special. So this stuff can be subjective, as we know, right?
Yeah, it's true.
All right, cool. So that is the top five. Let's get into the emails. Ladies and gentlemen, your emails have become a lifeblood of the show. If you'd like to be part of the show and put into play any question, concern, comment, correction that you might have, Tommy@alwaysbebooked.com. This is your opportunity to be a part of the show, and we'll read it on the air. You know, we don't always get to every single one you write in the week of, but we do our best and we do circle back and we will read your email on the air. Once again, that's Tommy@alwaysbebooked.com. Tommy@alwaysbebooked.com. My apologies. All right, let's get into it. This is Always Be Booked legend, Juan from Sacramento. He says, "Hi, Cones. Hi, Mr. Thomas and Rye Whiskey Ryan." All right, Ryan, getting nicknames already.
Oh, wow. Rye Whiskey Ryan.
I like it.
I don't know if that's a good look or not, but I'll take it.
Come on, it's a good look. Just got back from a 7-day Princess Thanksgiving cruise out of Long Beach. I am no longer booked. The future is unsettled. Princess has a nice product. Discovery Princess is the newest ship, but I really couldn't tell. Their clientele is an older crowd that appreciates traditional cruising, so I think hardware isn't a priority for them. Really nothing cutting edge. The closest they came was the Seawalk, a glass floor on Lido deck that juts out over the edge of the ship. Meh. But what they lack in cool features, they make for in well-conceived classics. As an example, the main theater is a very roomy with no poles or beams blocking the views. The pools have no slides, but they were big and had excellent teak decking and seating, as well as huge screens for NFL and movies. Medallion Net is their Wi-Fi, and we were watching NBA League Pass games nearly every night of the cruise from our laptop with absolutely no lag. The in-room television had a plethora of shows and movies. The selection was outrageous. The Piazza is their central gathering space. It's gorgeous and lively with bars and dining options and seating spanning three decks. So, kudos to Princess for focusing on perfecting the essentials rather than just adding more and more bells and whistles. Who needs a robotic bartender? Stupid. I mean, listen, there's something to be said for the gimmicks. I get it. You know what? Princess sticks to the traditional, and they try to nail. I had someone commenting that on the last group cruise. They're like, why do they do all this even on the celebration? Why do they give you so much of this other crap that you can take or leave and not take all the energy that you're going to focus in using it on stuff that we want and expect from cruising? So, I mean, what is your balance there from, I guess, traditional cruising versus newer bells and whistles and cool ideas that Royal Caribbean throws at you?
No, I like the mix. I said it before. I set my expectations up depending on the trip, and I'm booking trips that are more traditional. You know, I've got the Vision of the Seas coming up soon, and that's, I mean, not nowhere near bells and whistles like Icon, right? So I know I like that concept, and I like the bells and whistles. So I like the mix of it, right? And I can appreciate both ends of the spectrum kind of equally, honestly. And Princess as a concept, you know, it's a reliable brand. I've been on two Princess cruises, and I had no issues with it. I would do it again.
Makes sense. The dining was hit or miss. Here are a few hits. The Lido Deck pizza was fantastic. You always hear good things about that pizza on Princess. So much better than Royal Caribbean Cruise Line. Some real New York flop. One bite, everyone knows the rules. Oh, look at Juan giving a little shout out to Barstool. Little upstart, little project. This guy named Dave Portnoy started called Barstool. Wish them the best. The Crown Girl Steakhouse was $39 per person. Very nice meal. Worth the upgrade. Great experience. The 24-hour International Cafe was actually quality. They had real dining options that could replace a meal. They had a variety and quantity. Compare this with Cafe Promenade on Royal Caribbean. What a joke. The buffet was actually open when you wanted buffet, like after the shows got out around 9 or 10 p.m., like between meals. Let me put it this way. When people think of cruising, they think of available dining options at all times. How else can we please our inner slob? The misses lie in the MDR and the buffet. Both lacked imagination, pizzazz, and flair. It felt like the same thing every day, especially the breakfast buffet. I will comment in there, and I'll give you that one of, for me, Ryan, I don't know if you'll agree, one of the more frustrating things is venue times. Listen, I know you can't keep everything open all the time. I do get a little frustrated when I have to constantly circle back to the cruise planner to find out when a venue that I like is going to be open. Do you ever have that same experience?
Yeah, it's frustrating. I mean, especially after, I don't find it as much during the day, or I'll go to what's open. I don't care if one thing's open. It doesn't bother me. But after a night out and I can't find anything, or you're going to charge me, you know, whatever, $13 to get a piece of pizza to the room, that frustrates me. So, I mean, it's good to hear that this was, well, 10 o'clock is not too late, but yeah, I can't remember. I wasn't really partying when I was on Princess, but yeah, it frustrates me after hours when I really just want to soak up some of the alcohol and I'm looking for that, you know, that meal, that late night meal.
Since you have cruised Princess, do you kind of agree with most of what Juan is saying in general?
I would say so. I mean, I had a great MDR experience too. And I don't know. I thought it was average, I think, across the board from what I remember. I've been on so many cruises since then, but I think it's an average, reliable concept. I don't remember ever complaining about the food. So I guess I defer to Juan's comments here and it's way more recent, so I don't object.
The entertainment was a major dud. I blame the elderly clientele. Well, Juan being an ageist for a minute here. Low standards, I guess. We bought the soda package for the kids. Scam. Why? No souvenir soda mug. When you get the mug, they have a few filling stations on the ship. You get a lot of soda. But when you get no mug and need to see the bartenders for every soda, you just don't get too much soda. Cabo San Lucas is gorgeous from the ship. The water is beautiful. A $10 water taxi to the land's ends with a funny captain telling tales can't be beat. Walking the streets of Cabo is horrible. Just a scuzzy town. Mazatlan is home to El Chapo. A few taxi drivers told us the cartels owned the city, and for this reason, the crime is extremely low. Okay, going back to, I guess, the whole mob mentality type of thing, where some of the more mob-ridden towns are some of the safest. He felt very safe there. Old Mazatlan is real old Mexico. The market felt like a scene in Amazing Race. The beach had competing mariachi bands. Great views, Mazatlan for the win. Okay, so Juan enjoyed his little stint in Mazatlan. Puerto Vallarta is just an easy beach day. It seems obvious that the locals in Puerto are used to charging a lot more to tourists than in the other two towns. Chips, salsa, guacamole for $20. Come on styrofoam plates, but who cares? We're on vacation. Move on. In the end, I came to a realization. Does it really matter what cruise line you were on? Cruising is cruising. Open sea, the wake, sitting topside, margarita in hand, feet in hot tub, looking at the mountains, listening to the ship horn as you pull out of port. Pure cruise bliss. Researching the next booking. Juan from Sacramento, go Kings. Juan, that last paragraph, I mean, Ryan, did he not nail it on the head?
You nailed it, Juan. I mean, you're really eloquent in how you write, actually. Yeah, I'm really impressed with the email. And you really did summarize it well. I'm a bit surprised by the ports, actually, because I always, and I've never been to any of these ports. It's been on my list, and then there was an influx of crime, and I postponed it. I was going to do it this year. But I've always seen beautiful pictures of Cabo. And like I always thought of that as like the younger place to go and the party atmosphere and great beaches. So it's interesting your feedback on Cabo. So, but yeah, no, great synopsis on your cruise. I agree. I mean, if I'm on a cruise, I'm on a cruise. I'm getting more and more into that mentality this year. Right, I was on a few different cruise lines, and in the past, I was really leaning. I'd say I'm still leaning NCL, but I'm more open-minded. I realize now that there's no race to get into these loyalty tiers really anymore. I'm still young, and I'm sure I'll hit these loyalty tiers. But yeah, I'm on the side of Juan. I think any cruise is a great cruise, and yeah, I've been open to trying different cruise lines. I want to get on Holland too, but yeah, I agree. Pure cruise bliss can happen anywhere, any cruise line, any ship.
Absolutely. Yes. And I agree. Juan always brings it with the emails and has been a very, very loyal and appreciated contributor to the Always Be Booked Cruise podcast in many different ways. But you know, one time he actually rapped the theme song, so that was awesome. But anyway, that's the show. We definitely ran over a little bit, but I want to thank everybody for listening. If you guys want to be part of our community, join us on Facebook, the Always Be Booked Cruise and Travel Lounge on Facebook. It's where we share photos, share advice, ask questions, answer questions, and then just basically get to know each other. Always Be Booked Cruise and Travel Lounge on Facebook. If you want to hear a show a night, every night of the week, Monday through Friday, for just $8 a month, you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/alwaysbebooked. And, you know, we talk cruising. I've been a little bit more cruise news centric on the Patreon, but I'll also throw in some of my personal escapades, whether it's my job, whether it's personal life, anything else we talk. And, you know, that's for the real super fans out there. Always Be Booked. It has a Patreon show 5 days a week. patreon.com/alwaysbebooked. We have Instagram. We have YouTube. We have all this other stuff. If you guys want to book a cruise, tommy@alwaysbebooked.com, and I will help you go on a cruise vacation. But that's pretty much it. You guys are the absolute best.
Boat drinks.